Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us again on a Thursday evening. Thank you, one and all. And all the people who are listening wherever you are, whenever you are listening, thank you so much for following the show. My guest tonight is Victoria Luminary, and we will have a fascinating conversation with her. I'm really excited to have her here. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And there is so much to muse about this week with the shutdown of the U.S. government, such as it is. And, you know, what do I want to get into the politics of it? Not exactly. I want to get into the metaphysics of it. We had a number of shows. I think we had four shows about whether or not hell exists. How's that for a segue? Taken off in another direction? Not quite. And we had Bible experts that came in and talked about how in all of their studying and looking for it, they could not find the concept of hell as it's understood by most people anywhere in Scripture. It's just not there. It was made up from other stories. It was made up later by people, but it wasn't in Scripture. But the idea of hell is about separation. So the word hell, which is an old English word, is still used in parts of Britain, and it means to enclose. So when they talk about bringing the sheep in for the night, they hell up the sheep in the fenced-in area. Or if they're going to repair the roof, they hell the roof. It's about enclosing something, separating something. So what are you being separated from? Hell is being separated from God, and God is love, as we hear the description in the Scriptures. So here we are with a concept that separation from love and separation from God is what hell is. Okay, basic principle there. The conversation about why our government was shut down, the struggle, was about whether or not to pay for taking care of people that can't take care of themselves. I could just, you know, I could turn into my mother and just say how mean and nasty that is. But it's a basic idea that we're not responsible for those folks. They should take care of themselves. Which is not what it says in any of the scriptures of any of the religions, but certainly Christianity is about taking care of people. You're in so many ways. And I'm not good at quoting scripture, so I won't trip myself up and do that. But the idea that we are separate, which is kind of a scientific idea, it's the idea that we're not all connected somehow, really came out of the Enlightenment and science. Is that true? How does that idea really work out? Quantum physics has shown that it's not true. Everything is energy. Everything is connected. Everything is interactive. No, we're not separate. That's an illusion. Einstein said, reality as we understand it is an illusion, albeit a very persistent one. We are not separate. But politically, it's useful to think of ourselves as separate. And somewhere along the line, after the Russian Revolution, a child of the Russian Revolution who was an American immigrant, Ayn Rand, decided that individualism was the only safe thing because obviously collectivism failed and people got hurt in the Soviet Union. And she wrote novels, put together a philosophy, which was all about individuals and in free will, and that anybody who took anything from the government was a moocher. And that's sort of what's behind, that's the philosophy that comes up a lot behind all these folks that are saying that we shouldn't take care of each other, that that's a bad thing, that those people are intrinsically bad and they're taking from the good people at work. I find it fascinating that Anton LaVey, who created the so-called Church of Satan, said that all he did was took Ayn Rand's philosophy and added ritual and ceremony to it. That it was so perfectly designed to separate people from God that when he decided he was going to create an anti-church, that's all he had to do, was use her philosophy. But here we are in the middle of the 21st century with a whole crop of politicians and a whole crop of billionaires who are feeding a lot of money to the politicians, who are using that philosophy. And it's so completely is the opposite of any spiritual tradition that I know of and that I've ever read and that I understand, whether in the Christian, the Judeo-Christian realm or any other, that it seems very obvious to me that this is not something that comes from an enlightened point of view. I'm treading very lightly and not saying what I want to, but I think you can read between the lines. So as we look at all this, let's remember that, well, I think Mother Teresa said it best. If we have no peace, it's because we have forgotten that we belong to each other. We're all in this together. And as Ram Dass said, we're just walking each other home. So for my part, I'm going to do everything I can to take care of my brothers and sisters and not to allow other people to basically attempt to destroy them, which is how it feels to me. So that's much more political, metaphysical musing than usual, but seemed like what needed to be said. And now let's have a different kind of conversation with tonight's guest, Victoria Luminaire. Are you with us, Victoria?
Yes, I am. How are you, David?
I'm very good. And Victoria is coming to us from a cattle ranch in Texas, which for some reason as a city kid, I find incredibly amusing. There's, you know, other than living in a cave in the mountains, I can't imagine anything so totally different from what my experience has been.
Yeah. Well, so, I grew up with cows and I love cows and I'm just so grateful to have Texas Longhorns. They're probably the smartest of all the cows of bovine, and I just love them.
I saw some of the pictures of you with the girls, as you call them, and
yes.
It's very obvious that you love each other, that there's a real relationship there. It's very sweet.
Yes, we do. We understand each other. I think they love me because they love me, but, you know, it's really all about the food. It's all about the food. And, you know, that's probably why we get along so well, because it's all about the food in my world, too.
Well, one way or another,
you know,
depending on how you define food, because of the way things are set up, they don't get to reciprocate that part of it very well.
Right.
So the question that I always ask my guests is, you're doing this incredible work, which we'll talk about at length. How'd you wind up doing that? What was, you know, what's your story of how you got there? What was the walk about?
Well, you know, do I say the short version or the long version? And so, I often think, you know, I wish I were like a person who had a near-death experience and some remarkable moment in time, and, you know, that's what happened. Well, mine is a little bit different. I sort of was born different. I was born this way, and I knew things. Like when I was less than 4 or 5, I knew about there's one God, you know. I came in the house one day and said, Mommy, why are people arguing about God? Why are there different religions? Because there's only one God, Mommy. And my mother right. looked at me like, where did she come from? And then I talked about, you know, I also saw that God recycles reincarnation, right? Mm-hmm. So there were things that I just knew, and I was very intuitive, and I was very inquisitive. I wanted to know more about different things, so I delved into different religions. I did everything, you know. And then later on, I started to study actually ascension work with Marcia Dale Lopez, and I read all of the Joshua David Stone book, and, you know, followed that. And then I took Reiki. I became a Reiki master. And as a young child, I had a repetitive dream about one of the Reiki symbols, the very first one that is given to us when we receive Reiki attunement. And, you know, so I knew that that was my calling. And, you know, at that time, I thought, that's it forever. Well, and then, you know, I went on and I learned Eden Energy Medicine. I learned Option Method. I learned EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique. That's the tapping, in case people are listening mm-hmm. that don't know. And then, lo and behold, I took classes in Inca Shamanism. And that absolutely changed my life. So it's been a long road. It's been a 55-year road. But in, you know, spiritual time, 55 years is a blink of an eye, right?
Right, right. So did you study the Incan tradition with Alberto Velarde?
I studied with someone who studied with him.
Uh-huh.
And now I'm studying with some advanced teachers who teach and travel with students. They travel to Peru and all around the world, practicing ceremony and sharing their wisdom. So I've been really blessed. I've found the best teachers in the world. And I've just been a very lucky girl when it comes to finding the right teachers.
I've just recently caught the edge of the Inca tradition being initiated into the rites of the Munaki, which I will be completing this weekend. And so, you know, have watched a couple of videos about Alberto and his whole path of going to the mountains mm-hmm. and meeting the teachers. So I'm fascinated with the Inca tradition, and I know, you know, just the bare surface of it. Is there a way that you can give us an idea what the teaching is, what the basic perspective is?
I really would. I would love to. There's so much to share. I don't know where to begin. So let me begin with the directions. There are mm-hmm. four directions, actually six, when you think about it. So the first direction is the south, and that's the direction of serpent. We have an archetype for each direction. And serpent, yes. When we say our invocation, we ask, to the winds of the south, great serpent, come and wrap your coils of light around us and help us to shed the past like you shed your skin all at once. And so in the south class, and I teach directions, and in the south class, what I teach my students is how to release those blocks that hold them stuck in non-productive patterns. So those blocks might be helplessness, powerlessness, unlovable, unforgivable, those kinds of beliefs that they have that are subconscious that they don't realize that are actually getting in their way. And mm-hmm. so, like with my new program, Life After Loss, Healing a Broken Heart, I incorporate all of the shamanic, the EFT, the Eden Energy Medicine, all of it into this program, and help people to release all those negative emotions that come up during loss. So that's the south class. Then you move into the west, and the west is Mother Jaguar, is the archetype. She helps us to mulch heavy energies. So when we're working as shamans, we have her by our side, and she's helping us to get rid of the negative energies that are coming out of the person's luminous energy field as we're clearing it. And in that direction, what we're doing is we're healing our ancestors. We're healing genetic issues. We're healing all of those things that, you know, the beliefs, the family beliefs. Well, we've always done it this way. Our family's always been XYZ. You know, all the men in our family died at XYZ age, whatever, right?
Yep.
So then once we've cleared all that, we move into the north and we do what's called soul retrieval. So we go and we find the patterns from ourselves in other lifetimes. And it is absolutely fascinating how another lifetime and a vow made then creates a situation for us in this lifetime. And if we can realize that there is more that meets the eye, right? So we live in a three-dimensional world, and a wall is a wall, and it's solid, or so we think. But now quantum physics is proving to us that that wall is not solid, that we're not solid, that nothing that is appearing to be real is as real as it appears. The shamans have known that for eons,
right?
The shamans dream their world into being. So if you want to create something, you dream your world into being, and that's moving into the east, where you become a co-creator with the energies of the universe, energies of great spirit, God, universe, whatever name you want to choose. Those are just labels. And then we also honor the mother, Mother Earth, and we call her Pachamama. She provides everything that we need. So we honor her and all our brothers and sisters. So the stone people, the plant people, the two-legged, the four-legged, the creepy crawlers, the thin, the fur, the winged ones. We honor all of them. So we're not separate. And you were talking about that in your introduction. We're all one. And that's when we find peace, when we recognize that, as Mother Teresa said. And then we rise up and we speak to Inti Taitai, Mama Kia, Shasta. So Inti Taitai is Father Sky. Mama Kia is Grandmother Moon. And the Shastas are the stars. And the shamans believe that when we die, our bodies go to Pachamama. Our bodies go to Earth. Our wisdom goes to the mountains, and our soul goes back to the stars. So this is not a religion. It's a practice. And the different things that we can do as shamans, we clear out of the luminous energy field what doesn't serve. Because we're all walking around like Pig Pen and Charlie Brown. We're walking around with this stuff in our energy field, right? And it is affecting us. So when I was recently doing the grid, it was an East class, and I had just been through a life-changing event myself. And what I was shown by spirit was this grief that stays in our luminous energy field. And it's like having slivers or shards of glass or shards of fiberglass in our luminous energy field. Now, a sliver in your finger is never going to kill you, is it? However, it could fester and it could really interfere with your life. So if you don't heal those pieces, whether it be grief or it be the belief that, you know, you're not good enough or you're unforgivable or unlovable, if you don't heal those pieces, they follow you around like pig pen dirt, right? And they affect us. They affect our relationships with other people. That's why it's really so powerful. This work is so powerful because a shaman steps out of time. We step out of time to help people. We take them back to that or origin. And it may be, you know, the beginning of their soul's existence. It may be a lifetime you know, in the Renaissance, who knows when it was, for whatever that issue is.
And, you know, you're using a slightly different language than I would use, but you're talking about mm-hmm. the exact same work that I do. So I'm always fascinated all the different ways that it can be understood and approached. You see it as slivers. I see it as damage to an energy grid, because that was the visual gift I was given. You know, for my way of understanding damage to people and to buildings. I call the stuff that you're describing, I call spyware.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it works exactly the same way spyware does in a computer. It messes up what you're trying to do. It uses up system resources. You don't know exactly where it got installed, but you certainly didn't install it yourself.
Right.
And
exactly,
you know, what's the appropriate technique for that particular person and that particular kind of damage or belief to remove it so it doesn't keep screwing things up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and
are you familiar with
Ho'oponopono?
And
yes,
Doctor.
Of course.
Yeah, Dr. Hewland, now he had a different term for it, but now he talks about the stuff that's being removed when you do the cleaning process in Ho'oponopono. He calls it bad data.
Yeah.
That we're just carrying around from thought forms at large, from things that people said, all the stuff that you're describing, that just runs in us because it can. And that the job is to realize that we are, if something is manifesting in our experience, there is something going on inside of us, whether we're conscious of it or not, that's causing that. And you can look at what's being manifested, say, no, that's not right, and do the cleaning with the intention of removing whatever's causing the problem.
Mm-hmm.
I got to spend a weekend with him. He's quite a wonderful shaman.
Wow. Where did you spend the weekend with him?
It was in Boston 3 years ago, I guess. He does trainings all over the world. He has an organization, and he's not always the trainer. But he frequently comes to Boston, and it's, you know, a two-day training. I also got to interview him at one point, so I got to just hang out with him for an hour and a half. And he's a shaman. You know, his understanding of the world and the way he thinks has the particular flavor of where he comes from and, you know, the way they talk about it in Hawaii. But he's a shaman. He says the same things my teacher said. Mm-hmm. So, It was an absolute delight to meet him and spend a little time. And every time I meet, you know, a master in any tradition, but certainly all the shamans that I've ever met, it's just like, oh, that's how you talk about it. That's interesting. I never thought of it quite that way. And, mm-hmm. you know, and it's all the same stuff. It's just theme and variations, where you started, what your tradition came to understand and the tools that they developed. So, that was part of the reason that I was so fascinated with the Inca tradition, because it has a very different approach than the others that I've learned from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there are a few practices that the shamans do, especially in Peru. They give the rites. That's a very powerful healing practice. And then the despacho, which is a prayer bundle that is created with intention and then burned. Sometimes it's placed in water, sometimes it's buried. It depends on whether the shaman wants it to have a long period of, you know, decay would be buried.
Mm-hmm.
But a quick response is to burn it. And I'll just tell you a little story. Worry about that. I was doing a presentation in, I live about an hour from Killeen, Texas. So I was out in a place next to Killeen called Copper's Cove. And we created this beautiful despacho. There were about 15 people in the room. And I said to them, I will be burning the despacho tomorrow. Well, tomorrow came and things happened. And so I didn't get to burn it that day. I burned it the following day at 10 a.m. And one of the people, when I sent out the email and said the despacho was burned today at 10 a.m., sent me an email right back and said, and I felt it. That's how powerful these tools are.
Well, I'm sitting here with a big grin on my face because I didn't know that part of the tradition. But the last weekend that we did the Rites of the Moon on Key, I came with a bag of shredded paper, which were all the documents from a very difficult time in my life, a particular situation. And it was long enough ago that that stuff didn't need to be carried around anymore. But shredding it was not a sufficient ritual. It wasn't going to completely take care of releasing that energy. So I asked the shaman who was running the program if it was okay to use the fire. And after most of the other stuff was completed, I took a few minutes and I burned the shredded paper. And obviously, I was recreating the exact kind of ritual that is part of that tradition. So I'm just sitting here giggling, going, how did I figure that one out?
Well, you knew. I mean, you pulled it in, right? You pulled it in from the collective consciousness. So when we want something, when we need something, we can do that.
Yep.
So I had a difficult situation, and, you know, I'm just as human as everybody else, and unfortunately, sometimes I'm not very proud of how I handle things, and I shit on myself, and I say, you know, you should have done that better, you should have been kinder, you should have been calmer. And so this particular night, I knew something was going to happen the next day, and I said, okay, I'm going to connect with the Divine Mother, and I'm going to ask her to overshadow me so that tomorrow when this situation happens, I'm calm, I'm compassionate, I'm loving, I'm accepting, I'm forgiving. And it's so interesting that the following day, in connecting, like you did, with the collective consciousness to burn your papers in a ritual, what she did was she sent me a situation where I didn't have to deal with the situation at all.
Mm, great.
Isn't that beautiful?
That's wonderful. Like, hey, we're going to have to go to a break in just a minute. I want to make sure people know how to get in touch with you. So why don't you give us your website?
My website is www.takebackyourpowernow.com.
Terrific. And tell people how to spell your name because it's a little bit unusual.
It's V-I-C-T-O-R-E-A. And the last name is Luminari, L-U-M-I-N-A-R-Y. I just pronounced it a little different. It's spelled like luminary, and so I put a little flair on it. I wanted to be Sophia Loren, but I didn't make it, so I have a little Italian flair thing going.
Well, maybe next life. We're going to go to a break, and we will be back shortly, unless we get taller, with my guest, Victoria Luminari, and here on the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere, and we're going to keep looking for it. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
How do you wake up the entire African American community to the hidden issue of mental health problems?
It showed up in my life through one of my best friends, and we've been friends for over 30 years.
Share your story.
If we would have known earlier, you know, we would have been much more supportive with her.
Once I reached out to my sister, it got a little better. Once I told my mother, it got a little better. The more I talked about it, I felt it coming off.
The healing is in me, and the healing in a journey can also be extended to others.
It's our community and our mental health.
Giving voice to what you're feeling is part of the healing.
If you're strong enough to just open your mouth, that's all it takes.
And the most revolutionary and healing thing that Black people can do right now is to love one another.
It's time to share ourselves. Healing starts with us. Search online for Stories That Heal. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, the Ad Council, and the Stay Strong Foundation.
Before there were computer games and HDTV, cram courses and teaching to the test, there was this thing called imagination. A tool so powerful, it could transport kids on the most amazing journeys of their lives. From outer space to center field at Yankee Stadium. It is for these journeys that Destination Imagination was created, an extraordinary after-school program in creativity and teamwork for every child. At Destination Imagination, teams are formed and challenges are met with a whole lot of imagination. And while we can't guarantee it'll get your kid into Harvard or onto American Idol, we're pretty sure that Destination Imagination will be the most important journey they make this year, maybe any year. Parents, teachers, start a Destination Imagination team by calling 888-321-1503 or visit destinationimagination.org. That's destinationimagination.org.
Hey, parents, do kids think you're out of touch because of the way you dress?
Yes.
Well, say hello to instant style with Fashion On. Just spray Fashion On whatever you're wearing and look cool in an instant. Turn orthopedic shoes into vintage high tops, pleated khakis into skinny jeans. Even clip-on ties become fly gold chains. Just spray, let it dry, and presto.
What about my fanny pack?
You mean your hip MP3 player?
Wow.
But what about my bifocals?
You mean your hot pink shutter shades?
Hey, I can't see!
But your kids can see you, and trust me, they see fashion!
Thanks, Fashion On!
Fashion On is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with Victoria Luminari in Texas with the cows, talking about the work that she does, which is partly with the Incan tradition. But tell me how you weave in the other elements of all the things that you've learned into the process that you do with people.
Well, you know, I figure that this is the way I look at things, right? If God gave me the tools, he wants me to use the tools, right? So yeah. God, spirit, universe, again, I don't care what name, you know, if you'd like me to use the name God, I use the name God. It doesn't matter to me. I know who that being is. And so I have been given some amazing tools to use with people. So I can easily jump around. And if someone just doesn't resonate with something that maybe I'm doing, maybe they don't resonate with one of the shamanic practices, maybe an illumination, it doesn't work for them. Maybe they aren't visual and they can't go back in the soul retrieval and see or feel what was going on. Well, then I can at least get them into their emotions and we can tap on the emotion and clear it that way. There are a lot of different ways to practice healing. That's why, you know, there's no one right way for anybody, right? So like during this recent event that I had in my own life, you know, and I think that God gives us these events so that we can grow. And we can then help others. You know, we can put the hand out, like you were saying at the beginning of the show, you can put the hand out and help the others step up. Because, you know, that's the only reason I can see why we go through such traumatic events. And so that, I feel, my purpose is, you can't have empathy if you haven't experienced. So now I have empathy for those that I'll be working with in the future. And, you know, so there were days when the shamanic work worked really well for me. And then there were days when I needed to do more energy medicine or more tapping, or I had to, you know, maybe do some affirmations. Louise Hay is one of my mentors, and through her book, and, you know, just focusing on, you know, positive affirmation. Sometimes you can't get out of the fear to focus on that. So the tapping helps, and I tap in the affirmation after I've tapped out the negativity.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I work with a person, I never know where we're going to go, because it's their energy that leads us. Every session, every class I teach, every session I do is unique for the people who are involved. So, you know, I can say I'm teaching a class in this, which I've taught before, but that class is not the same class. So if people want to repeat, they're going to get something fresh every time.
Right. Right. Yeah. You have to prepare, because you feel foolish if you don't prepare, and then it goes wherever it goes.
I know. I have an outline, and I'll tell my students, and some of the students like outlines and they want to know what the outline is. Well, if I hand that out, it's right. going to look like I lied. Because in the moment, I'm getting the information that, boom, this is what you need to tell them. This is what you need to work on with them. It's like, whoa, okay. So we're getting real-time knowledge, real-time wisdom is coming through. And I think times have stepped up for that. I think the energy is moving so fast that, you know, what we've written even a month ago has shifted and changed in such ways we don't even know. So we're working with somebody, and then it goes, oh, wait a minute, this is how we're going to do it this time.
Right. And especially with a group of people that are already doing the work, you're going to be responsive to whatever is appropriate to them at that moment and what's coming up for them. I got invited to Arizona to work with a group down there. And we set up the dates, but nothing else. And I said, well, I guess I should try and figure out what I'm going to talk about, since you're asking me to come down. But I know that these are people that have been doing this work for a long time, and they've got both their questions and they've got starting places that they already use. And I don't care where I start. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, we're over here. Okay, let's take a look at it over here. But it always feels foolish to say, I don't have any idea what I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. I have a friend who says I should wear a digital recorder at all times, because you can never tell what will come out of my mouth. And
isn't it true? That
yeah.
is so true. Do you have
that experience where you say something and go, that was good. Where did that come from? I never heard that before.
All the time. And I've started to, you know, tell my friends and students, I just need to, you know, have a recorder on all the time.
Right. And when I teach, I hang one around my neck. So, you know, whatever I'm doing, wherever I am in the room, I'm getting a relatively decent recording. Because who knows? Someone will ask a question and the answer will come through, and it'll be something that never came out of my mouth before and that I never put together in that way before.
Yeah.
So.
Exactly. And that's that piece. Remember, I talked about how Spirit showed me the shards of glass for that particular class. That was not on the outline, not at all. And then they went off and they worked on past grief. I had them list, you know, and this was all in the moment. You know, I was shown, you have to make a list of all the things that just come up in that moment, you know, list, you know, make a list of 10, whatever, 25, however many, all the losses, all the grief, and they worked on that, and that was a huge piece for that particular group of students. Huge piece.
Yeah. The question that's coming up for me at the moment, because I see it all the time, and you're doing similar work, is do you see childhood abuse, or the features of childhood abuse and the energy frequently, because I'm frequently looking at the energy and going and asking people, and I do it remotely and talk to people on the phone. You know, I'm seeing a pattern here that is frequently associated with childhood abuse. Do you have memories of that? And people are frequently very freaked out that I asked that question and I knew about it, or they don't exactly know, but they don't remember anything before age 5 or age 4, which is a very common element of that situation. And I'm just wondering, in your work, how much you find the same kinds of things with people that were abused as kids and how it affects what they carry around with them.
Well, that's where we're establishing those negative core beliefs, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it may be abuse as we know it, right? As we know that, you know, our parents were rough with us, or they were, you know, somebody sexually abused a child or something like that. It can also simply be something someone said. And if a child is sensitive, like I'm a high level sensitive, so mm-hmm. that's why it's good for me to be out in the country with cows. And I
exactly.
have to protect myself when I'm around other people, because I'm like a little sponge, you know? So if somebody says something to me and they looked at me in a certain way and their energy was overbearing or overpowering, and I'm a little child, that could, in my world, translate to abuse.
Right.
It doesn't have to be the big A of abuse. It could be a little A of abuse, and it still forms that negative core belief. Now it's affecting us in our future, right? In our adult life, right?
Yeah, the element I see a lot is if you feel helpless and terrified, what most kids will do is go out of their body. They'll close down the first and second chakra and leave, at least partway, because it's not as scary and it doesn't hurt as much. And that serves you very well in that moment, but it becomes a habit. So anytime that you're confronted by something that you can't deal with, you leave your body.
Yeah,
and that pattern leaves you open to all kinds of psychic attack entities. All the stuff that I'm usually cleaning up is at least partly caused by this habit that served the child well when they were being confronted by something they couldn't do anything about, but left them open to all kinds of other problems.
And that's one of the pieces that you work on, and the piece that I work on as well, is helping to clear those attachments, those entities. Mm-hmm. And sometimes under a difficult situation, we lose a soul part.
Yes.
So we want to reunite with that soul part. We want to bring it back and ask it what it needs in order to come back. So we not only lose a soul part if we've had a traumatic death in another lifetime, but we can lose a soul part earlier in this lifetime.
Right. The way I describe that to people who've never heard of it before is that, you know, there's a part of you back in 1627 saying, this still sucks. I still don't like it. It's awful. And it's just sitting there, you know, screaming and ranting and raving about how bad it was, and has never resolved it and never let it go. And meanwhile, you're trying to live your life now with this part of you out there screaming at you from something that was horrible at the time.
Right. And it prevents us from moving forward with the mission that we came here to, you know, finish.
Right.
So if we came in, I have a friend, and I think she'll be okay. I'm not going to use any identifying terms. But, you know, She wanted to write, and she had this aversion to it because in another lifetime, when she shared her wisdom through writing, she had a public lashing, right?
Right.
So that's
right.
Another lifetime. So it affected her in this lifetime. Once she healed that piece in that other lifetime, she could then move forward with her work.
Right. And there's there's stuff that comes from family lineage and bloodlines with that as well. Like my family is Sephardic Jews who escaped the Inquisition, the Spanish Inquisition. And they fled across Europe until they got to what is now Hungary and Czechoslovakia and the Carpathian Mountains, and were there for hundreds of years. But, you know, there was always that memory of expressing yourself and showing who you are can be life-threatening.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And we might be related.
Could be.
My father was Czechoslovakian. My mother was Polish. We might be very closely related. We don't know that.
Right. Well, my grandparents considered themselves Hungarian ethnically, mm-hmm. Hungarian Jews, but the paperwork, because of where the boundary was that particular week, was Czechoslovakia, yeah. Because that boundary in the Carpathians got moved every time there was a minor war.
We should look into that some other time.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
It's interesting how many of us from that background have wound up in this work. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I wish there was still somebody in the family who remembered the name of the village, because there's a wonderful family story about them that's strange enough that I think I could go back there now, and there probably are people that go, oh, yeah, I know. I remember the story of Fanny and Benny.
Wow. Isn't that neat?
Yeah. I don't, you know, without the name, I wouldn't even know where to look. So what other things do you want? We have about another, not quite 10 minutes, 7-8 minutes. What else do you want people to know about your work and what you do?
Well, I was wondering if it would be okay with you if I led them on a little journey for maybe a minute or two.
Led the audience?
Yeah. Would that be all right?
Sure.
I don't know where I'm going, so just like when you teach, I have no idea where I'm going, but I'm being guided to do that.
Okay. Well, we've got a couple of minutes, so let's go.
Okay. So I invite the listeners to take a few deep breaths, breathing in through your nostrils and out through your mouth. And as you breathe, allow your lungs to expand. We often take very shallow breaths, and we very rarely allow our lungs to really expand the way they can, the way they're meant to. And imagine in front of you a person or a situation that you may be struggling with in some way. Maybe a situation or a person that has brought hurt or pain to you. Someone that when you think about them, there's that twinge like, I'm trying to be a nice person. I really am, but what I'd like to do. That person or that situation, bring that to mind. Continue to focus on your breath and imagine that person in front of you and in your mind's eye. Let them know. Let them know how you feel inside, and you'll do this silently. And let it all out. Tell them how they hurt you. And then imagine, and some people are not visual, so allow yourself to feel or hear, see or sense, and however you do it, imagine their response. Now, this may surprise you. Just accept whatever they say. And in this moment, ask to be shown the gift of the situation. And don't let your monkey mind run this now. Allow monkey mind to go sit in the corner and suspend the thought that there could not possibly be a gift. There always is a gift. Find that gift. Ask to be shown. What's the gift? Did you learn self-reliance? Did you learn self-love? Did you learn forgiveness? What is it you learned? Allow yourself to become open to receive that gift. And in receiving that gift, allow your heart to open and send forgiveness to that person or situation. And for some of us, that little heart, you just be sending the width of a pencil of forgiveness. For others, it may be very wide, and it's okay. Don't judge it. Send what you can. Beautiful. And notice what happens to that being or that situation. Good. And now, fill your heart with forgiveness for yourself. Beautiful. I can feel this from everybody. Fill your heart and forgive yourself. You did nothing wrong. You're perfect. The situation was perfect. You learned. You grew. Forgive yourself. And in forgiving yourself, you may even see the bonds, the chains, the ties fall away and let them.
Beautiful.
And then just flood yourself with God's golden white light and bring the energy up from Pachamama and have it all meet. Ah, beautiful, right inside your heart. Good job, everybody. I am tingling all over the place because I'm feeling everybody else. Yeah. Oh, my God, I have goose pimples everywhere. Ah, great.
Well, thanks
work,
so much
everybody.
For sharing that. We're actually going to have running out of time.
So that was the
perfect ending for this. Thanks so much for being on the show. My guest tonight is Victoria Luminari from middle of nowhere in Texas with the cows. And tell us again your web address.
It is www.takebackyourpowernow.com. And I have something I would like to share with people if they go to my blog. I have 17 lessons learned from a broken heart. It's the outline for my program. So I wanted to share that with folks.
Fantastic.
And the things I learned that they may benefit from.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for being on the show. This was
great
fun. Good conversation.
Thank you. You're so sweet. Blessings.
Many blessings to you too. And so if you're at all curious about what I do, you can go to househealing.com, take a look at what I do. On the contact page is every conceivable way to get in touch with me, including my scheduling calendar if you'd like to have a 20-minute free assessment to see what's going on with you and how my work might be helpful. If you want to listen to other shows from the Farkas Files or pass information along, go to, cleverly enough, thefarkasfiles.com. We'll take you directly to the archive and links to listening to all the previous shows. And there's a lot of shows in there now, dozens and dozens. We've been doing this for years. So have some fun with that. Thank you all so much for spending your time with us. I really appreciate it, and I know that people all over the world listen to us at strange times on strange days, certainly not when we're recording the show, and that's wonderful. The technology is just magnificent in making this available to lots and lots of people. So thank you one and all for being with us tonight, and Once again, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. See you next week.